Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Willis?
Well, we got a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They are everything John Deere. Go up there and see me if you're looking for a new tractor, mower. They have all the new electric mowers and handheld equipment in stock. And if you need parts service, they do it all up there. If you're looking to get your machine worked on, tuned up, or repairs made, now's the time to get in there and get it done. Fall is right around the corner, and they will get busy. So get ahead of the rush and get in there and get your stuff all tuned up and ready to go for fall. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call, 530-226-9226, or catch him on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Okay. So,
here we go.
I was trying to mind meld with the engineer in a different room through two panes of glass.
I thought you were giving me the thumbs up because it really was a great job.
Oh, wait. Hold on.
Oh, there we go.
Thumbs up for Bill.
Yeah. So,
oh boy.
So, what do we have going on this morning?
Is it going to be that kind of day?
Yeah.
It is, okay.
Yeah, all right.
So, let's see. Today is September 22nd, 2024, when we're airing this the first time, because we'll probably do it again because you're going to like both these segments. We have two different guests today. First hour, we are talking about Operation Grim Beeper. Grim Beeper with our guest, Claire Lopez. I heard that last night on something when I was driving. I drove 8 hours yesterday. I had plenty of time to listen to stuff, and somebody called it Operation Grim Beeper, and I was like, okay, that's really funny. I'm going to use that. And the second hour is What's in Your Pot? Lots of reports coming out about all the stuff we've been telling you that actually we've been accused of being, you know, whatever, conspiracy.
Yeah, it looks like now you're really going to have to throw all your pot away.
Yeah, because it's loaded with pesticides, and I think you will be mind blown.
Leave it out for the mice and the rats and
well,
all
actually,
that,
some of the pesticides, when you smoke them, it's cyanide, so you know, you have that to look forward to. Melts your brain, and that's like the scientific thing it says. That melts your brain. So you have that to look forward to in the second hour, but the first one we get to hear about how we beat the, I'm using the term we loosely, we get to hang with our folks in the Israeli military, and Claire can give us more detail on that, but they dealt a decisive blow last week, and anyone who missed that, seriously, the memes were worth catching up on the news story. They've been fantastic. So Claire has been on before, and I have her full biography on there. But from 2013 to 2016, which I think was the fun part, I don't know if it was fun for her, but it's kind of fun for me to say, she was a member of the Citizens Commission on Benghazi. And God bless America, didn't we want more people on the Citizens Commission to Benghazi? Continues as a member of the Citizens Commission on National Security. She was formerly the VP of the Intelligence Summit. Can't have too many people on an intelligence summit these days for God's sake. She was a career operations officer with the CIA, hence the conversation about Grim Beeper with her. She's a professor at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006, served as a consultant, instructor, intelligence analyst, and researcher for a variety of defense firms. I can only imagine how long that list is. And in 2011, she was named Lincoln Fellow at the Claremont Institute. And she is just an all-around good person, and she is tons of fun. We love talking with Claire. We've done bunches of shows with her. So, Claire, how great was this week for you? She's an expert on the Middle East, actually. That was your career, right? You were Middle East mostly?
No, I was not, actually.
How come you know so much about
Aaron,
it?
Aaron, and hi to Bill. Very glad to be on with you both
thank
again.
You.
Really got to update that bio for you.
Oh, darn it.
From 20...
Just got good at it.
10 till 2014, I was a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. 2014 until 2020, I was senior vice president for research and analysis there.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, until I got kicked out.
See, Claire's even more impressive than I thought. There
well,
you go.
Just updating things a little bit here. In 2016, I was actually named to Ted Cruz's National Security Advisory Team, but up until a few months when he dropped out of that presidential race. So it was only a few months there. Let's see, what else? Currently, I should say that I am independent since 2020, and I'm incorporated in the Commonwealth of Virginia under Lopez Liberty, LLC.
Nice. Okay, so I'm emailing you right now. Need a current bio. So anyone listening,
I'll send it to you.
On September 22nd, 2024, you just go to the website at wethepeopleradio.us, and you'll get the whole current scoop. Because it's really long, so I thought, hey, I'm going to start in the middle this time, because, you know, sometimes I don't get to the middle. So I thought I'd start there, and psh, dang, if it wasn't old news. Well, so what isn't old news is the... You lay it out however you'd like, because I just think it's so much fun. I've got to post some memes while we're at it, because they were priceless.
Yeah, so this past week probably was not so much fun for the Hezbollah operatives who got taken out in an operation that targeted their pagers. Those little kind of old-fashioned communications devices that aren't used that much anymore. But in the earlier part of this year, 2024, I guess it was, Hezbollah leadership, Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah and so forth, decided that cell phones were not secure in terms of communications because the Israelis could hack into them much too easily. So at that point, early, I think maybe February of this year, 2024, Hezbollah put out an order for like about 5,000 of these pager devices, which are still manufactured, and they placed the order with a Taiwan company called Gold Apollo. But what happened is that Gold Apollo had sublet its license to a company in Hungary, which more and more kind of looks like it might have been a Mossad front company from the get-go.
What are the odds of that?
But in any case, it was that company that actually manufactured these pagers and delivered them to Hezbollah earlier this year. But along with the, you know, the manufacturer, they added a couple of extras, a couple of ounces perhaps, of the explosive PETN, pentaerythritol tetranitrate, and some kind of a trigger device that would set it all off. And they somehow got, you know, these little bits into these rather small devices, quite small, and got them delivered to Hezbollah in Lebanon earlier this year, maybe a few months ago or so. And so what we saw this past week was really amazing. I mean, not just amazing, you know, how the supply chain was intercepted by whomever. I mean, people are, you know, kind of thinking it was the Mossad, but we'll say by whomever intercepted, you know, and then, you know, everything inserted they wanted inserted, and then the things delivered to the Hezbollah people. But so what happened on, I think it was like, what, Tuesday of this past week, whomever, but let's just speculate, let's say it was the Mossad, the Israelis began to suspect that perhaps the operation had been discovered, or at least that there were suspicions about the pagers, and that caused them, reportedly, to speed up the timetable. And so it was on this past Tuesday that they, whomever, triggered these explosions simultaneously across Lebanon and into Syria, as I understand it as well, setting off explosions in all of these pagers. Now, what they did is sent a pager message, that would be a text message, to the devices first to make sure that the Hezbollah guys, and these were all Hezbollah guys, these were not, you know, innocent children playing on a soccer field or something. These were Hezbollah guys that got these pagers. To make sure that they would pick them up from wherever they were, out of their pocket, off the table, and have them in their hands, and a second later, after they press whatever button it is to read the text message, that blew the thing up. And that ensured that the devices were not only in their hands, many of which were blown off, but close to their faces, because they were going to read the message, right? And so that led to quite a number of very serious injuries, hands, fingers, faces, eyes. In a way, a little bit of poetic justice, you might say, in that the Iranian regime, the of course, the Islamic Jihad terror sponsor of Hezbollah, during so many of the street protests, we might note that September, this month we're still in, just about a week ago, marked the two-year anniversary of the beginning of the Zan Zendegi Azadi movement, a woman life freedom movement in Iran, following on the murder, the bludgeoning to death of that young Kurdish woman, Mahsa Amini, because her hijab had slipped while she was riding inside the family car in Tehran. Yeah, but in any case, during the protests, which blew up after that, and people were outraged in Iran, as well they should be, many of the Iranian forces deliberately shot at the protesters, at their eyes, and at their private parts. And so, in a way, these pagers blowing up in the hands of these Hezbollah jihadis, holding the pagers close to their faces, kind of in a way a bit of poetic justice. Now, that was Tuesday. We can get to the rest of the week after that, if you'd like.
Yeah, well, they there were a lot of pictures online, and that was, I think, where the jokes and the memes started, was a lot of them were still in their pockets and blew up. So it was kind of like,
well, some were. I mean, people were just kind of latching on to a, you know, kind of prurient interest kind
of course,
stuff.
Of course.
The most of them,
were in their
and
hands.
Deliberately, again, were intended for when they picked them up, the pagers up with their hands.
Yeah.
That was the idea. And so you've got, was well over, I may have even forgotten the number now, but over 3,000, maybe it's over 4,000 injured. And many, many hundreds of others killed, outright killed, which not only decapitated.
Well, unlike the stuff that these guys do, it didn't take out a hospital, a school.
That was the point.
Yeah, it
so
was very, very
specifically targeted,
yep,
just to the bad guys, just to the Hezbollah jihadis,
and
nobody
the people
else
close to them.
But even physically, even not even for, it was so specific, the charge of these little pagers in their hands.
Yeah,
that it was their hands, their fingers, their faces, their eyes. But what I was going to say is that what this did is took out thousands of their very Hezbollah's very top fighters, because that's who got the pagers. Not every single rank and file member, but the top levels, they're gone. So not only are the top levels wiped out, but we'll get to the rest of the week when more targeted, very specifically targeted attacks have taken place. But that not only took out, you know, hors de combat for thousands and those killed permanently, but it also instilled, you know, a sense of just psychological dislocation, fear of touching anything technological, be it a pager, a cell phone, as well.
Yeah, if it has a button, you have to wonder, you know, I mean, you have to wonder, right?
Well, exactly.
Well, we're going to take a really quick break and then come right back with Claire
okay, one more point.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Well, the last thing very quickly of the three objectives here, took out the fighters, psychological discombobulation.
Sure.
Number three, their comms are gone. They use these pagers in replacement of cell phones. And so they're gone. They're out. They don't have comms anymore at that level, which they thought were safe, encrypted, and secure. And not only were they not, they don't have them anymore.
How much you want to bet if they put in an order for cell phones?
Well, from home.
Yeah. They're going to be like, all right, you guys have to go over and watch them make them.
just about.
I don't know. It's
so those three things, you know, to me, really important to.
And this
to
started. They had to
done.
Have been working on this for just
years,
such a long
literally
time.
Literally years. Yes.
God, that's...
from idea to implementation and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, to catch the pagers before they got here and all that. It wasn't like they went and snuck up on a few guys.
Well, again,
in their house.
If that company in Hungary, as is suspected, was a Mossad front company, then they had that production part of it covered from the get-go.
Oh, it says a lot about their ability to keep a secret, too. You work
on a project
that long and nobody says anything.
Well, there was a terrific thing circulating. It was a black and white picture of a guy in a suit, you know, carrying a gun with a silencer, all really understated, and it said Mossad, because James Bond needs a hero.
it's like, I mean, just amazing operation.
Yeah,
right?
Really. I mean, hats off. I'm sure they'll be talking about that forever. We'll be right back. Our guest is Claire Lopez, and we're chit-chatting about something that was named by somebody else called Operation Grim Beeper, which I frankly thought was funny. And you're listening to We the People. You can find this at wethepeopleradio.us. Just a suggestion for Hezbollah the musical. All these songs take on new meaning now.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Officer Joe's in here with us for the next hour. He's like, I'm moving away from you now. You can't get away from the microphone. I mean, we shouldn't make fun of him, but honestly, you have to, because it's just so it's fantastic. And we had heard so. We want to confirm or deny. We had heard that a lot of the pagers were modified on the ship after they were released for delivery. Were they all done in a factory, or were they?
I don't know that. I don't know that. I thought that they were assembled and prepared at the whatever this company was in Hungary.
Sure, that makes sense.
It's called BAC Consulting.
Yeah, and I understand the CEO of that company is now missing.
Oh, whoops.
There's some speculation about that company. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he might have not been that guy. Well, and then a little Wikipedia search, you know, the pager was really, the first real pager was invented by a Jewish engineer in 1949.
Yeah,
I'm like, how classic
amazing,
is that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
another argument for time travel. It's like, yep, the Mossad can time travel. That's my theory. okay, so what else about this? I mean, how come nobody squealed? Like, how does that work? That's what we were talking about on the break. Was for heaven's sakes, somebody
excellent
always
discipline, don't they?
God.
Whoever the they is, they have excellent discipline.
Yeah,
but what followed was step two, step three, and I think this is a multi-phased operation, but. The very next day, and I think that would have been Wednesday of this past week, walkie-talkies, another, you know, sort of simple pre-cell phone kind of a communication device, they started blowing up all over Lebanon and maybe even elsewhere like Syria, too. And so, you know, that method of communication was now gone too. And more of you know, the Hezbollah fighters were taken out.
Sure.
But then, the very next day, I guess, I think probably by Thursday, and certainly now through the weekend, there were lots of Israeli airstrikes conducted, including one in particular that took place in what's called the Dahiya. That's the southern part, suburb, almost, I guess, of Beirut. And it is the stronghold of Hezbollah. Well, it appears that a number of them, maybe as many as 15, of what they call the Radwan force, that is the top echelon of Hezbollah, you know, terror jihadis, they were meeting together in a building in the Dahiya. And a very precise airstrike took them all out. So not only thousands of the fighters, you know, incapacitated, many, many hundreds outright killed, comms gone, terror, you know, instilled, but now the top levels of Hezbollah's terror apparatus are gone, 15, including one in particular whose name was Ibrahim Aqil, A-Q-I-L, Ibrahim Aqil. And he had taken the place, I guess kind of moving up the ranks. I don't know who will follow him. But you might remember that back some weeks earlier in the summer this year, an airstrike, again, in Beirut, had taken out another top Hezbollah military leadership figure whose name was Fuad Shukr, S-H-U-K-R, Shukr. And he, in turn, had previously taken the place of one notorious terror chieftain of Hezbollah named Imad Mughniya. Now, Imad Mughniya was not only, along with Fuad Shukr and the others, not only responsible for the attacks in 1983 on the U.S. and the French embassies in Beirut, but also, of course, the U.S. Marine Corps barracks, that bombing.
My brother was stationed there like a month after that happened.
Oh, my. Well, that was the work of Imad Mughniya. Now, he was sent off to meet his virgins in early 2008. That's when Fuad Shukr moved up to the top position of terror chieftain of Hezbollah, which means that he, well, I should back up. Not only Fuad Shukr, but before that, Imad Mughniya, while he was still among us, they were the key contacts, collaborators with the Iranians for the attacks of 9/11. But I don't know why. Nobody ever talks about that.
No.
But so,
wouldn't want to tell
Mughniya,
people that.
Mughniya's gone in 2008. Fuad Shukr just earlier this summer. And now the third of the top ranks, and that is Ibrahim Aqil, along with 14 or something other top Hezbollah Radwan force leadership people. All gone.
Yeah, it really says a lot about their ability to track and identify these leaders.
In real time.
Yeah, and they don't forget. I mean, going back to 1983, they knew who this guy was.
Yeah.
And
but you know what? We didn't do that. We didn't exact, you know, that just, you know, result. That the Israelis did it.
Yeah.
And I recall that this was during the Reagan administration, of course, in 1983. Just saw the movie, by the way, Reagan. It's excellent. Go watch it. But in 1983, during the Reagan administration is when this occurred in Beirut. And I recall good friend and missed so much, retired four-star Admiral James, nicknamed Ace Lyons, who at the time of his retirement had been the commander of the Pacific Fleet of the U.S. Navy. Anyway, At the time, I think he was with the Mediterranean fleet, but Reagan instructed Ace Lyons to get together with the French, because they'd been hit too in their embassy, and figure out who did this and how to respond. So they did, and Ace comes back to Reagan and says, look, this is Hezbollah, which is just forming at that point in time, early 80s. Their headquarters are in the King Abdullah Barracks in the Bekaa Valley. We and the French, we can mount a joint strike and get rid of them. They'll be gone. And Reagan was ready to give the order to go ahead with that plan, which would have saved how much?
Oh, yeah.
But then Secretary of Defense Cap Weinberger interceded and somehow turned Reagan's mind around and told him that if we were to conduct such a strike, we and the French, against Hezbollah, that the entire Arab world would turn against us and we'd never again have a friend in the Arab world. Now, a bunch of nonsense, of course, but they persuaded Reagan. The strike never took place, and the rest is now history.
Wow. You imagine one person, you know, and a handful of their compatriots and all the destruction they've wrought over the years.
Yeah.
I have
and because of a decision, right?
Yeah.
One decision in the Oval Office in 1983.
I have a question. You spoke about pagers. You spoke about handheld radios.
Uh-huh.
What about the solar panels? We heard about solar panels blowing up. Could you explain what those were and did they get anybody?
Apparently, maybe some. I don't have numbers on that. But door intercoms as well. I mean, different kinds of devices, not just the pagers or the walkie-talkies, but other devices too. And I don't know, you know, the toll that those explosions took, but I do know that there were other devices that were also, you know, specially prepared.
I think if you look at Sun Tzu, Art of War, the Israelis have been absolutely perfect at it. They drove the battlefield, and they drove the combatants where they wanted to be. And so when they took out those 15 people, they knew there was no longer any communications, and they pushed them right into that building.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they may have thought they were safe there. They may have thought they didn't have pagers in their hands or pockets. No walkie-talkies either. That was an aerial strike.
They had real-time communication, as I understand, and they had made a phone call to the leader that you just spoke about, and they moved him from the underground part of the bunker up to his personal office, and then they hit him.
Yeah, Ibrahim Akil.
Ibrahim Akil, that's right.
Uh-huh.
Is that true? Is that confirmed?
I don't know that those specifics. I've not heard, but it sounds about right. Sure.
So the Israelis can call you up to blow you up. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we can understand that the top leadership, meaning Hassan Nasrallah, who's the Secretary General of Hezbollah, his number two is named Naeem Qassem. They probably live underground in bunkers. And Akil would have been often there as well, knowing, you know, how good the Israelis' intelligence is.
Thinking out of the box with your expertise, what do you think the Israelis have on plan, you know, planned for them next, like Mossad?
Well, I think they're systematically taking down Hezbollah right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll recall that back after the 2006 war, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution, number 1701, that called for any militias, any armed militias, to vacate, to move out of the southern part of Lebanon. It's like, 7 or 8 miles or something, up to the Latani River, which runs crosswise across Lebanon, but to move north of the Latani River. Well, and then UNIFIL was formed to, I guess, kind of sort of maybe enforce that. UNIFIL, United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, is what that acronym stands for, and they promptly got in bed with Hezbollah and never did a thing. And so Hezbollah, an armed, increasingly well-armed militia, basically even further militarized the entire part of southern Lebanon south of the Litani River down to the border with Israel. And then from these places, you know, certainly since October 7, or maybe I should say October 8, last year, 2023, you know, we're launching rockets and projectiles and missiles from that area into northern Israel against kibbutzim and towns and villages there, to the point that something like 80,000 or more Israelis have had to vacate their own homes in northern Israel and move towards the center of the country to hotels or stay with family or other friends or whatever to be away from the range of these Hezbollah launches.
And just so people have some kind of frame of reference, like if you're in the United States and you're thinking, well, that means I've got to move to, you know, the Midwest. Well, that's pretty far. You know, mm-hmm. that gives me a place to go. Not that you have any contacts there. But Israel fits, the country of Israel would fit in the state of California 8 times.
How about the size of Rhode Island?
You could fit 8 Israels in the state of California.
Like Rhode Island. Yeah.
So move to the middle of the country. That's like you could ride a bike there.
In the days since, Hezbollah has launched a barrage of rockets and missiles and so forth that have reached as far south even as Tel Aviv, which is smack in the middle of the country, south of Haifa in any case, further south than Haifa. So the point being, though, that the UN, the Security Council, UNIFIL, never ever enforced Resolution 1701, never ever moved Hezbollah north of the Litani River, and that's what's going on now. Israel is taking enforcement of 1701 into its own hands and basically wiping out Hezbollah, personnel, terrorists, but also more recently in just the last day or two and more, the launch sites, the weapons depots, the ammunition stockpiles, all of that in this area of Lebanon, south of Litani River, down to the Israeli border. That's what's going on right now.
And Lebanon has a fairly large standing army, don't they?
Well, yes, which the United States and others have lavished funding on, which, of course, goes straight to Hezbollah, because Hezbollah owns and operates the Lebanese armed forces. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brutal.
Do you think that Israel can sustain a two-front war? And where are they getting their munitions now that they're? I know the U.S. is still sending them munitions, but as I understand it, Kamala says we're not sending any more 2,000-pound bombs and weapons of basically mass destruction. Are they going to other arms suppliers, maybe in South America or Korea?
The fighting in Gaza has really tapered off. Hamas has been deconstructed, certainly in the north, in the center, Khan Yunis area, and pretty much even down now in Rafah. And so there is a shift in the IDF focus from fighting there in Gaza to the north, troops, battalions are being moved. So it's not even so much a two-front war in that sense anymore now that Gaza is tapering off. But let's remember, they're still, you know, facing an onslaught over the Golan Heights from Syria, from the Shiite militias operating in Iraq, from the Houthis coming on up from Yemen, and, you know, Iran itself, certainly back in April of this year that happened. So they're still fighting a multi-front war, but in the immediate area, the Gaza operations are tapering off, while the northern, against Hezbollah operations are gearing up.
Well, it's kind of a good thing they planned for that a long time ago.
They really did. And as far as the ammunition and so forth, I was listening to a very good presentation today from former Ambassador Yoram Ettinger, and he was explaining that there are a couple of different levels of interaction between the United States and Israel. And at a political level, let's say President Biden, Vice President Harris, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, you know, that level, you get a lot of this pressure that's been publicly, you know, levied against the Israeli leadership, certainly Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense, you have Gallant, and so forth. You know, ceasefire and they were holding up shipments of certain supplies, weapons, ammunition. But at another level, and Ambassador Ettinger was making this point in the presentation today, a webinar, that at the level of military to military, mill to mill, and intelligence collaboration between the United States, our forces, and the Israelis, it's a very different picture. The supply continues. We continue to send what they need to fight. Israel, in turn, turns around and provides us with way more, probably than they ever get from us. We can talk about that at some point. So that exchange, again, operates on a couple of different levels, and at the mill-to-mill intelligence, cooperation, it's very strong, very steady.
That's good.
So they are getting what they need, but another thing
Hold that thought, Claire. We're going to take a really quick break, or we're going to have it all at the end, which will be kind of weird. Plus, you know, I did find a couple other songs for Hezbollah, so, you know, got to make sure we fit those in and thank the sponsors for the station and stuff. You can find us at We the People Radio. Bill's asleep at the switch. It's a .us, by the way.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Sure, after you've been a terrorist your whole life, that song is written for somebody else, but it was fun anyway.
Yeah. So, Johnny Cash always was one of my favorites.
God Bless America. I saw that and I was like, that's harsh, totally playing that. All of this has been just so many years in the making. Just to get everybody to this point, they've been fighting there forever. Honestly, just based on what you know and what you've done in your career and stuff, do you think that will ever, ever stop over there?
Not as long as Islam rules the thinking of these people. We probably know, our listeners probably know, that in the very early years, according to the Quran and the Hadiths and the Sirah, Muhammad, if he ever lived, but we're not sure about that, but if he did, that he tried to get the three large, prosperous Jewish tribes of the peninsula to convert to Islam, to come over to him, the Banu Qurayza, the Banu Nadir, and the Banu Kanuka. And they didn't want to. They wanted to be Jews, and they wanted to remain Jewish. So he wiped them all out.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since that time, there has been, of course, an imitation, emulation of everything that Muhammad supposedly ever did. And there are references in the Quran to Muhammad as the Ansan al-Kamil, which means the perfect man, which means that anything he ever did must be emulated and copied down the generations forever and ever and repeated. And then there's another doctrine within Islam. It's called the doctrine of sacred space, which means that any place ever conquered and or occupied by the forces of Islam, which would include the entire Levant and certainly on up into the Iberian Peninsula, formerly called Andalusia, the Indian subcontinent, and so forth, ever occupied or conquered by the forces of Islam is forever what they call waqf, W-A-Q-F, waqf, meaning land endowed by Allah, that is God, to Muslims in perpetuity. So it is obligatory on every Muslim on the face of the earth to fight Jews, to kill Jews, and to recover land once of formerly conquered Jerusalem, for example, conquered by Islam in like 638, I think it was, have to be reconquered. And they have to fight to the end of time to do it, or they go to hell. This is what they believe. So no, it's not going to stop. I'll tell you though.
Anybody who thinks we're going to just have a meeting, you know, somebody's going to get elected, they're going to have a meeting, and I don't.
Well, the whole two-state solution is a pipe dream.
Ridiculous. And we can talk a whole other hour about that. But I was going to say the one thing that can cause the forces of Islam to hold off, at least temporarily, is if they see themselves so outnumbered, outmatched, that they cannot continue to wage jihad successfully, then and only then it's obligatory for them to hold off in a hudna, a temporary backing off, until their forces are rebuilt, regained, and then they have to go back at it again. So the job right now for Israel, for others in the region, defenders of their own national sovereignty, the thing to do is to so overwhelm the forces of Islam, and that, of course, includes the Islamic Republic of Iran's leadership, as well as their proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Hashdu Shabi in Iraq, the Houthis, convince them that they are so overwhelmed, so outmatched, they cannot possibly achieve victory, and they got to back down. That's what has to be done right now.
I haven't heard Saudi Arabia and Egypt jumping in on this. They're keeping their borders closed, as far as I know. Is that correct? And do they have what's their motive for staying out of the fight more than the obvious?
The Mossad.
Well, I mean, you know, Egypt is pretty, shall we say, upset about the IDF's taking over of the Philadelphia corridor. That is the 7 mile strip that separates the Gaza Strip from the Sinai Peninsula and Egypt, because they were making an awful lot of money. The president of Egypt, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, and his family were, you know, they were well compensated for, you know, the taxes, shall we say, on what passed through those tunnels underneath the Philadelphia corridor. But at the same time, now that the IDF controls all of that, the Egyptians don't want any part of Gazans coming back over to their side unless they pay, I don't know, I've seen $5,000, I've seen the equivalent of $10,000 a head, and then they'll consider it. So they don't want any part of these people. They know they're trouble. They're Muslim Brotherhood. 80% of the people in Gaza literally are of Egyptian heritage. That's where they came from, or their, you know, the parents, grandparents. But the same thing for Saudi Arabia, but was a little bit different. Saudi Arabia was supporting the Abraham Accords and will again, you know, once we get proper leadership back in our own White House. They were behind the acceptance by the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Morocco, Sudan, the four. Their acceptance and joining into the Abraham Accords. And it was expected at the time back then that Saudi Arabia itself, with MBS, the son of the king, Mohammed bin Salman, that with his backing, that Saudi Arabia would also at some point openly join. But certainly they were behind it. They remain behind it. What's going on behind the scenes remains an exchange between Saudi Arabia leadership and Israel. That's not changed at all. Only the open, appearances may have paused the cooperation for the moment. But that'll get going again once, we have proper leadership back in Washington, D.C.
The control of Hamas prior to the conflict, controlling the population, wasn't the unemployment rate very, very high? And so many young people did not have jobs, which would foment unrest. And they did that purposefully to keep them upset?
Well, it wasn't only that. It was also the fact that of all the gazillions of dollars that international aid coming in from European countries, from the United States, from UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, bagazillions of dollars coming in humanitarian aid, which could have built Gaza into a two-state solution with its beautiful shoreline on the Mediterranean, enormous freshwater aquifer that underlies the Gaza Strip, climate conducive to growing anything you want in produce. But all of that aid, or a good part of it, went to line the pockets of the Hamas leadership, like the dearly departed Ismail Haniyeh in Doha, Qatar, Khaled Mashal, who's still over there, Abu Arzouk, Marzouk over there in UAE, line their pockets, and in Gaza to buy weaponry and build tunnels. Hundreds and hundreds of miles of tunnels underneath that little Gaza Strip. That's where all the money went.
Is there any hope?
Yes, the people were left in poverty. Yes.
Is there any hope for the 100 hostages left?
Yes, of course there is. The IDF is very much focused on rescuing whomever they can that's still alive there, and they are constantly trying to do that every part of their mission, every part of their operation still going on, that is still going on, in particular down in Rafah.
But do you think they'll be left alive?
Yes.
I think they want to rescue them, but do you think that...
Yes. Some will, perhaps. Some will not.
I mean, they killed the last batch right as the IDF was on top of them. That's what I see happening.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
No, I heard that. Yeah.
Wow. What else do people need to know as they kind of watch this? I'm not even going to ask you what you think of all the people that are sympathizers for all this, because that's just...
They have no clue what's going on. They're completely ignorant of the actual facts. I think this is the final showdown, or at least a major showdown, maybe I shouldn't say final, but a major showdown right now between Israel and Hezbollah. And it's important in this respect, not just so that the Israeli citizens who live in the north of Israel can go back to their homes and rebuild the ones that have been bombed, but also because Hezbollah was the insurance policy for the Iranian regime's nuclear weapons program. That is, I think that the Iranians are very close to finishing deployment of deliverable nuclear weapons. I think they've got at least a small handful of warheads that have not perhaps yet been attached to the nose cones of their missiles. But when that happens, that would be the final step, and Israel would have to take action. But pending that, Israel perhaps was somewhat deterred because of Hezbollah's 150,000 or whatever it is missiles in their arsenal on their northern border, Israel's northern border, and many of those missiles equipped with precision guidance packages, kits, upgrade kits that had been sent over from Iran to Hezbollah. But now with the takedown of Hezbollah, it's certainly greatly degraded. Not destroyed completely, no, but greatly degraded, and their capabilities, their missile launch sites, their ammo dumps, their missile, the missiles themselves. That greatly degrades Hezbollah's capability as a deterrent force for Israel when the time comes that they're going to have to go after Iran's nukes.
Nice. Well, I've already sent you an email about coming back on about the two-state solution because we have to talk about that.
We should.
And and the bio, so you can go about your life and just check
that.
Your email
I'll
later.
Do that for you.
But yes, we are flat out of time for this hour, which I knew would happen way too fast.
Of course,
so
it always
thank you
does.
So much. Our guest has been Claire Lopez, and we have a special song for the Mossad. It's a little shout-out.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you, Claire.
Thank you both.
We'll be right back in another hour with WeThePeopleRadio.us.
I am the eye in the sky, looking at you. I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules, dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind. And I don't need to see anymore to know that I can read your mind.
Second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. You can get anything you want, John Deere, from Pape. They've got you covered. They got tractors, mowers, implements, full parts and service. Go ahead and see them. If you have work that needs to be done on your equipment, go home and see them now before it gets too busy. And they'll get you in, get you out. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Almost sounds like Alice's Restaurant.
Yeah.
You can get anything you want.
You can get anything you want at Pape Machinery.
Yeah, that doesn't rhyme.
Yeah, well, he tried.
I know. We need a new name. This is probably not a good thing to do live on the radio. Let's come up with a new rhyme. Yeah, that's how bad things happen. So, Officer Joe's got some new stuff for us on what's in your pot. We have seriously been talking about this forever, the whole marijuana thing and the fact that it's loaded with chemicals. And let's see, we have on the page for today. So today is September 22nd, 2024. Have a handy dandy pocket guide to pesticides found in illegal cannabis grow operations. So they've got that for you. We have the sheriff in Siskiyou County explaining how toxic pesticides are being found everywhere. And we've got a couple of, what would you call those guys? They're like YouTube guys that...
Influencers.
Oh, is that what you...
Yeah, they're influencers.
Apparently I don't get out that much. So, okay, and they're influencing people who smoke pot, really, because they're kind of pot, they're pot guys.
They're pot smokers.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, the one guy was actually smoking pot in the interview.
Yes.
I did manage to... cut out the F-bombs in his intro, but I...
But you've got the whole thing posted.
I did post the whole thing, so I put a little thing on there. Yeah, the guy uses strong language, but it is worth listening to. It's terrifying, but it's kind of funny in a way, just the way he says it. But the fact that he is a longtime pot smoker...
It shows the level...
It's like, what the heck?
The level of insanity and addiction. What addiction does to you?
Well, and also the collusion with the government agencies on not shutting this stuff down when they know it's killing people and it's messing people up, and they know that the products are contaminated,
oh,
but
yeah,
it's okay to go ahead and sell it anyway.
How about Nicole Elliott, who's the head of the Department of Cannabis Control, whose husband was the co-author of Prop 64 and certainly had, wanted to see marijuana be expanded in the state of California. And so today we're going to talk about pesticides in your pot. And we've been talking about this bill, you, myself, and Aaron.
Oh, sure.
I've been speaking about this.
Long time.
Yep, 5 years. And what happened was this year, Jeremiah LaRue, Sheriff of Siskiyou County, kind of ripped the Band-Aid off the wound of pesticide exposures when his deputies were stopping cars coming out of the grows off of A-12 in Siskiyou County. And they were arresting the drivers for thousands of pounds of marijuana. And the drivers were relaying that they were delivering this marijuana to Bay Area and to Los Angeles dispensaries.
That's right.
And naming names where they were going. Well, at first, Jeremiah just put that out. Sheriff LaRue put that out. But then he elected to start having this stuff independently tested. So they had the National Guard come in. They had a couple of other testing agencies, environmental testing agencies come in, and they have now done a pretty substantial testing of all that marijuana, and I will get it to you. I have the listing for you, Aaron, and I'll get it to you. Because of that, then we went into what happened in the last couple of weeks, which was Paige St. John from the LA Times, who has been deep diving.
She has been really doing a great job.
Yes.
I mean, they have done a really, but this guy that you sent me, I really should look up his name because it's, he's got a weird name. It's probably not his real name. The thing about that is he's Elden Ring, which, and it's got like Lord of the Rings sort of thing, so it's probably not his name. It's his stage name. But he said this was like 3 months ago,
right,
that they first started coming out with this. So even the people inside that world are kind of starting to tell each other, by the way, we've got problems. You want to play that part?
Sure.
Okay. It's the beginning of his YouTube thing. It's actually pretty funny.
Bombshell was dropped. Okay. Today, a bomb was dropped on the entire cannabis community. A bomb was dropped. A nuke, arguably. A massive nuke. The cannabis industry today was exposed. Specifically, the California cannabis industry. Some of your favorite brands got exposed today for having insanely high levels of pesticides in their carts. And I'm not talking about, oh, just one or two carts failed a test, or, oh, it was just barely over the threshold. We are talking carts that are hundreds of times over the legal threshold for testing. We are talking brands that had 25 third-party tests done on their products and failed all 25 of them. Okay? We are talking major. This morning, the LA Times dropped an article titled "The Dirty Secret of California's Legal Weed." Okay, yeah, amazing day to smoke flower, but I mean, who knows what's also in the flower, right? Who actually knows what's cracking in the flower? But the dirty secret of California's legal weed. Everyone's known for a while, there's bad actors in the legal market everywhere, right? But especially California. I mean, just a couple months ago, Stizzy got exposed for backdooring and running unlicensed dispensaries. That's like a normal occurrence here in the market. Everyone forgot about that pretty quickly, right? But California brands do a lot of tricks to stay afloat, right? And I'm not saying that it's entirely the fault of the state or the brands or anyone, but California brands pull a lot of tricks behind the scenes to make money. Because with the current tax rates, it's very, very close to impossible to make a real company out of just selling weed. You have to cut corners somewhere. Some brands cut corners on packaging. Some brands cut corners on marketing. Some brands cut corners on the product itself. But here, we have a really extreme example of cutting corners on the product itself. Okay, so let's get into it. So, we're not going to read this entire article word for word.
Yeah, because it goes on and on. But this is where they are in their industry. Like, hey, wait a second. And he literally, I know you have it all right there, so I figured you could do it more succinctly than he could.
Well, one of the things we should do is define terms, because there'll be listeners out there. They're going,
what's a cart?
Yeah, what's a cart?
What does that even mean?
It's just a glass tube that holds a highly processed cannabis oil, and we'll talk about that. And then it contains an atomizer. So once you connect it to a heating source, a battery.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It vaporizes, and then you get the... Oh, hydrogen cyanide! I forgot to tell you. You get the smoke or vapor that goes in your lungs.
Yeah, because it converts the pesticide into cyanide.
He goes into that. So anybody who's listening who goes, "Oh, this sounds like BS." Seriously, the interview that or the podcasting that the guy did there, I listed two. Actually, I found another guy who went through the article. So if you want your mom to listen to it and you don't want the little F bombs in there, have him listen to the second one. The guy with the white shirt. He's not quite as funny, but he's from that same end. Industry, he goes through this article and lists all these chemicals, and they're like, if you smoke this one, it turns to cyanide. I mean, it kills rats. I mean, it just all this. Yeah. Anyway, go through the list.
I think what's a misnomer for people, and I've even heard it here locally where you've heard about farm to table.
Oh,
your cannabis farm to table.
Yeah, that makes it sound so wholesome.
Yeah. Do people understand that the state of California allows 66 pesticides to be used on a cannabis crop? And what's really interesting is when you go to the Department of Cannabis Control's website and you look for those 66 pesticides, they just give you like a general list. They don't give you a specific list. So this last week, that didn't satisfy me. So I called the Department of Cannabis Control and said, hey, I would like to get the absolute direct list. We can't provide that for you. You have to go to the Department of Pesticide Regulation, and it'll be on their website. So then I went to the Department of Pesticide Regulation. They refer you back to the Department of Cannabis Control, and there's no complete list. So we're getting that
complete. Oh, terrific.
Yeah, we're getting that complete
list. These are all chemicals that were banned from cigarettes a long time ago.
A lot of them were. And you know what's interesting? Do I need a license or certificate to apply pesticides on cannabis?
No.
This is right off the DCC. You do not need a license or certificate to apply pesticides if you're only applying non-restricted pesticides to your own property or your employer's property. If you were hired as a cultivator, which requires some pesticide use, you do not need a license or certificate to apply non-restricted pesticides on your employer's property. You just need to go through what's called pesticide handler training annually. Well,
oh, okay.
What's interesting is that the feds don't allow any of these pesticides for marijuana. Zero, because marijuana is not federally legal. That's why they've been working so hard to get it declassified. When we talk today, and we're going to talk about these chemicals, and I'm just going to give you generalized, we need to understand the effects of organophosphate poisoning. And so there's a mnemonic that's taught in public safety, and it's the mnemonic sludgem: salivation, lacrimation, urination, defecation, gastrointestinal motility, emesis, or meiosis. So what does that mean? That basically means that pesticide exposure is going to make something occur in all of your orifices of your body, because that's how the body's going to deal with it. It wants to get out of it. So you're looking at you know, stuff coming out of your mouth, stuff coming out of your eyes, stuff coming out of your genitals, stuff coming out of other holes in your body. You're looking at vomiting, and you're actually looking at cellular changes. So it's interesting that, let me go through some of these chemicals. And if people are interested, on January...
It's more fun to listen to those guys read them because they get them all wrong.
Yeah.
It's kind of, well, so if you're a scientist, you should listen to these because it's actually
wrong.
Pretty funny.
I'm going to get them wrong, too. And really, the bottom...
No, they got them really wrong.
The bottom line is listening to one of the foremost cannabis pharmacists in the United States, which is Phil Drum.
Phil Drum, yep.
And Phil would tell you immediately... You're smoking cyanide gas. What else do you need to know?
He actually said that. I mean, we have him on the radio, several years ago, and was talking about that. And we got a lot of pushback for that. People said, oh, that's not real. They're testing all of it. It's legal, and it's tested.
Yeah, I love it. It's a legal business.
And now we're finding out,
Yeah, you're legally poisoning
not
people.
Not so much.
Well, first of all, the testing is completely broken down in the state of California. So there are some legitimate testing labs, and NRESCO being one of them. NRESCO did tests up here. They took 1,000 samples from Northern California dispensaries, and of those thousand samples, 80% had some kind of mold or pesticide that was harmful for human health. Now, they're a legitimate testing lab, but there's a lot of illegitimate testing labs out there, and it's a wink, wink, nod, money under the table, like Stizzy did for theirs. You know, you can get a test, and this is the other thing. You can get a test on your cannabis crop, and it can come up clean. You're good for 30 days. They're not going to come back to you for 30 days. So from day 2 to day 29, you push all this other marijuana through your business. You're not going to have an enforcement officer checking you. So it's very easy just to open up the back door and take
it
back.
Plus, it depends what lab you go to, because like you say, some of these labs, if it benefits them, they'll give you a clean bill of health. And these a lot of these not the growers, but the co-ops or whatever they're called, they know who to go to get a clean test. And if you give them a bad test, they just don't go back to them.
Right.
They go to somebody who will give them a good test.
There's a document that came out in January of this year. It's a memorandum from the Department of Pesticide Regulation called the DPR for the state of California, January 31st. And it's online. Everybody can look at it. And it talks about acute symptomology and worker safety associated with pesticides detected at illegal cannabis operations in Northern California.
Mm.
And what it basically said.
That was our clue.
Hey, it's live radio.
It is. But you know what? That was our clue. We do have to take a break, and that is the song.
Let's take a break and come back.
Let's take a break and come back. All we'll talk about pesticides some more. No apology. That was kind of funny, actually. Little Eric Church coming at you. So you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Cue Eric Church.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around. I wanna feel its sway, wanna feel its sway, put some feel good in my soul. Drag a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Want a little more right.
That's money right there.
Oops. Oh, and we're going to keep talking.
Hey, no dead air, it's us.
We are the dead air.
This is what you get with live.
That's funny. So not ever coming up? Well, that's kind of a fun song.
So, folks,
how about this? When you get it, tell us and we'll play it, huh?
Dear listeners and my guests, I'm so sorry. We have a small issue with computer, technical stuff, but I promise to play the song.
No worries. You just wave your arms in there, you know, like we're landing a plane.
As soon as possible, our technical unfreeze, I will do it.
Okay. You know what? Electronics are terrific, but you know what? It didn't explode, so that's good.
Yeah, that's
actually,
right.
You know,
nothing exploded, but just for some
reason. It blew up in your face, so all's good.
Just don't answer your pager. It's not good.
I'll pay some attention and I'll put some power into it so it will play in a second.
Oh, there you go.
I'd rather listen to the control booth
than
the song anyway. She's awesome.
I would too.
She's awesome.
The last time I think she piped in on the show, that was when The Rock came through the window. So when she said, "Dear listeners," I was like, "Oh yeah, I remember that last announcement of Dear listeners."
So
came with Aaron, broken glass.
5 million people.
Oops, you got to talk.
Big microphone. Aaron, approximately 5 million people, Californians, are estimated to consume cannabis products every month. Okay, so that
explains the driving. I just want to get that out there. Not going to belabor it, but wow.
Well, there's good news, actually, for Northern California, because the Avoid the Six grant just put out a lot of money for cannabis enforcement in driving. It's called Avoid the Six. It's six local agencies that get together.
Okay.
But it's a California grant, and they just gave the Redding area, actually the Sheriff's Department here got $500,000. So we're going to start seeing some enforcement. The sheriff estimated that 1 in 8 drivers is driving under the influence. My experience is actually actually much higher when we test for probation and the people go through and do a survey. The amount of people
it's self-reported.
It's probably better.
Yeah, but even 1 in 8. When you look at how many cars are on the road, 1 in 8.
Sure,
it's a huge number.
You're counting 1, 2, 3, and those 8 cars have gone past you.
Yeah. Right?
Well, like yesterday, you know, like I had to drive all the way to Roner Park and back, and I kid you not, like even last night. When the traffic was much lower at, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, I had people driving along, weaving in the lane.
I like the ones that drive along
with their blinker on.
With no headlights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I had some with no headlights. I had some with no taillights. But they were driving, like, over in the emergency lane. Half the car was in the emergency lane. Half was in the slow lane. And it wasn't for just a second, like they were eating a sandwich. I mean, it was like they were, like, literally splitting the lane. It just... And it's not like drunk driving. I mean, I'm 63. I've seen some drunk drivers. I might have accidentally been one back in my 20s, without confirming or denying that. But drunk drivers drive a certain way. You see the drunk drivers kind of bounce from the lines a lot of times. They'll tailgate somebody so they can follow them, so maybe they're a better driver than they are and they can actually get home. They do different things. These guys don't do any of that stuff. It's got to be drugs.
It's divided attention. That's where it's all at. And it's all about the divided attention. They can't maintain divided attention.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about what happened with Jeremiah releasing all the information, Sheriff LaRue from Siskiyou County, is he was working, Page was working on that information. Page released this article, and immediately that's what they're talking about, the bomb. The bomb went off in the Bureau of Cannabis Control. A whistleblower came forward. A scientist, the lead scientist for the Department of Cannabis Control, came forward and said, we're not testing for all this stuff, and the labs were allowing these labs to give results that are false, and we know they're false.
Well, the guy says in the video, both those guys say in the videos that I've posted, they said, because they read the article out loud, most of it, and said that for the ones that they asked, this guy called, because he does business with them, they're sponsors of his podcast thing, and he called them and said, well, are you testing for, you know, whatever the cyanide stuff is? And they said, well, no, it's not on the list, but it was found in the test results of your product. Are you taking that out? Well, no, it's legal because they're not testing for it. So we're complying with
the ordinance.
And that's over 330 pesticides have now been found in this marijuana. And this marijuana is killing you. Can you imagine being a cancer patient going in for an end of life saying, okay, last ditch, I'm going to try some marijuana because the bud tender says it's going to help me with my nausea, which is a legitimate. There's other drugs that are better, but marijuana users use for that. All of a sudden, you get, not only do you have cancer and maybe respiratory difficulties, but now you're getting pesticides. It's going to...
Smoked pesticides in a lot of cases.
Well, yeah, smoked pesticides in a lot of cases. Think of how quickly that's ending your life in a horrible fashion.
Well, one of them, what, liquefies your bones or something? Parkinson's.
Fuses your bones.
And there was lots of them, the side effect of the pesticide, the ingestion of the pesticide, whether you smoke it, eat it, or whatever you do with it, taking that pesticide into your body has a direct Parkinson's link. Not we suspect, not it might have. And I forget, do you remember where they said it was in the Central Valley of California? And
yes.
This is the Central Valley of California. They had a lot of people using this one particular brand, and they had a massive influx of people with Parkinson's.
Well, and then one point he made that really blew my mind was after their product failed the testing and was shown to have all these pesticides in it, they were allowed to sell what they had left on the shelf before they implemented any change. So they knew this stuff was poison, but
they didn't
rather than hurt the company, go ahead and sell it, but just don't sell anymore.
And that's identified in the Times article. Paige did a good job. And there's several different ways that you can get dirty product, which is already on the shelves, through. You can do what's called it's called the process of remediation. So you can say that it's been chemically treated, now it's clean. You can say that it's...
What?
Yep. You can use time. Time is one of the things you can use to have the chemicals outgas off of the marijuana. You know, we should do more today than just talking about the chemicals, but we should help people actually use marijuana. How do they identify that their marijuana is actually dangerous? Well, first of all, let me give you the statistics. So 84% of the marijuana in the state of California is tainted with pesticides or molds that are harmful for human health. We can just go that with that for a number. People can argue that, but that's being put out by all the cannabis
you,
labs.
You have been in the grows, the illegal grows, where huge percentages of the stuff from the stores comes from. They claim that it's coming from, you know, I don't know, some pristine factory somewhere. It's not. They're getting it from these illegal grows. You've been out there. I've been out there. We've seen 55-gallon drums of stuff you cannot pronounce. In one case, I tell people this all the time. Spray adhesive. I guarantee you nobody puts spray adhesive on your food and gets away with it.
That was used to hold more pollen on the plant.
So they could harvest it faster and do more crops. But well, this is what's going on in those grows. We've seen it, and now it's finally showing up at the end with proof.
When we go in the grows at night, Aaron, and you shine your flashlight
on the... Does it glow in the dark?
It glows in the dark purple, but if it's a warm day, you can, you know how you can see in the desert, you can see the heat waves coming desert?
Sure.
You can see the chemicals coming off the marijuana, right?
Wow.
And if you smell it, remember, if you smell it, the molecule's inside your brain already. It's already inside
your
body.
It's up your nose, yeah.
It's up your nose. It's too late, right?
So you look at all our law enforcement, and that goes without saying that they're
being subjected to that stuff
and
just going in there eradicating
years.
It.
This is the 500-pound gorilla that people are asking me not to talk about. And
you have to.
I have to. I've got to keep our deputies safe. Unfortunately, if we go to the full level of keeping our personnel safe, there will be no marijuana eradication. That's pretty much it.
Well, because who would do that? Who's going to go in there and do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's like, let's go eradicate Agent Orange. Go in your regular clothes and your regular shoes and your regular everything. How did that work out for all of our soldiers in Vietnam to work around Agent Orange?
Yeah, look at them today.
That's what I'm saying.
Dying off today. Well, okay, so my marijuana friends out there, how do you identify your sprayed weed? It's hard to identify with your nose or your eyes, but it's easier to identify than lace weed. And so here's some following traits that I recall. It appears unbelievably resinous. So it's like goopy, the marijuana flower that you're holding in your hand that you're going to roll. I mean, it looks like it's got basically motor oil on it.
It's sticky.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Sticky. It smells of chemicals. And if it smells of chemicals, that's not good for you. It has an artificial taste. And you can definitely tell that. And it looks off, like the human brain knows. The human brain's looking at this product going like, yeah, it's like an innate sense in us. We look at something, we go, that's not good
for
me.
See, like things that smell like skunks, I don't want to put them in my mouth, so really they all fail for me.
How about this? How about if you're, they try to remediate old weed, they'll spray it with hairspray to hold the weed together. So your buds are really hard, they're compact, and they're shiny.
They might have hairspray on them?
They put hairspray on them.
Okay.
To hold the marijuana together.
That's organic.
Let's see. Contaminated weed is essentially weed that contains anything other than what's naturally in the cannabis plant. And the highly toxic chemicals or very dangerous diseases, because we haven't talked about diseases in the plants. And some people might think that the plant is just dusty, but all of those have different meanings. So let's talk about fungal infection, because that's very common. Cannabis is susceptible to fungus, both during cultivation and during the drying stages. If it becomes rampant to the point where you can actually see it, then it renders the bud unusable. And that's when they spray it. They'll spray it with hairspray or they'll spray it with another chemical to alter it. Because remember, every plant is $1,000, right? That's roughly what a plant goes for. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a greenhouse, you've got a minimum small greenhouse, $100,000. so you get this fungal infection, and while smoking bud infected with fungal spores is dangerous, vaping gives you a much greater chance of harm. And why is that? Because smoking, while it goes into the lungs, vaping goes into the much deeper part of the lungs, okay? And so even at low concentration, these fungal spores can cause fungal pneumonia. And if you're vaping the cannabis flower, you're probably getting some kind of fungal. You get powdery mildew. It encompasses various species of fungus that can grow on cannabis flowers, and it creates a powder like. You'll see it. It's like a white covering. And inhaling these spores in large quantities comes with the risk of mold balls. These things called mold balls that form in your lungs. They require surgery to be removed. Everybody knows about aspergillus, myotoxin producing. I apologize if I'm not pronouncing some of these words. So this mold causes aspergillus in people who already have lung conditions, and it harms them. Now, healthy people can probably handle it, but people who are unhealthy, it's very bad for them. There's another mold called penicillium. It's a common mold, and it produces allergic reactions with people that get like hay fever. And you'll know people that smoke a lot of marijuana. They get that marijuana cough. It's chronic. It's that chronic cough that doesn't go away. Now, mold is not the only thing that we have to look at in organically infected cannabis. And we're not talking about organic standards like to the organically grown food. It's just means that it's a natural product. So we got bacteria to contend with. And bacteria doesn't produce spores because those are often destroyed by smoking. And though it doesn't have the same risks of fungus, handling and consuming infected cannabis can still transfer bacteria to your mouth by means other than inhalation. So it does have peril too. And what molds or what bacteria do we have to look for? Salmonella. That's a very common one, right? Contaminates food, causes mild to serious, food poisoning. We know about that. It can live in cannabis and may have the same effects if you handle contaminated cannabis. And think about the handling of cannabis, right? If it's being harvested in a damp environment, it's going to grow mold on it, and that's going to create bacteria. There's all kinds. How about Streptococcus? That's a common bacteria that can cause infections that require antibiotics to treat, and those can be mild to severe. Well, that occurs in cannabis, so we have to deal with that. The other thing, and this is where pesticides and fertilizers come in, is heavy metals. And so if you're getting your contaminated cannabis, remember, your chances are at least 8.5 out of 10, you're going to get contaminated. Well, heavy metals occur naturally in nature, right? And so in low concentrations, we all get them in our bodies. We get them in our vegetables. But in high concentrations, heavy metals are fatal. And so, for example, the chemicals that you were talking about, the super glue that they were putting on.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we traced that.
From China, by the way.
No, that batch that we actually looked at in Siskiyou came from Brazil. That got traced all the way back to Brazil through New York to a chemical company in Brazil.
What did we go back through to China on? There were a bunch of them.
Yeah, that was all the carbafurin and some of the other chemicals.
I had to take pictures of them. The names were, they seriously looked like you took an alphabet puzzle and just dumped it out and put it on a big can.
Methyl cyanoacrylate. Well, so a lot of the fertilizers that the marijuana industry is using contain heavy metals. And these accrue over the lifetime of the cannabis plant. And like nothing goes away in nature, right? It all ends up in the end product. And it reaches, by the time you get to harvest, a lot of these chemicals get to a dangerous level. So cadmium, everybody knows that cadmium is a carcinogenic chemical. It's a heavy metal. It causes bone weakening, kidney damage. It's a common toxin in smoke, and it's highly dangerous. So you're getting that when you're smoking it. Arsenic, everybody knows what arsenic is. It's probably the most well-known heavy metal. Symptoms of poisoning include vomiting, watery diarrhea containing blood, abdominal pain, and death. So arsenic,
Great.
Lead poisoning. That's a big one. Poisoning has a plethora of unpleasant symptoms, abdominal pain, constipation, headaches, infertility. Hello, pot guys. You're not shooting. You're only shooting blanks. That's why. And also, it causes memory problems, irritability. You can get tingling in your hands and feet. And some of this is irreversible and can cause a severe mental disability. And it accounts for about 10% of mental disability otherwise unknown. And then finally, we have pesticides, right? So you're getting the we're getting the four for today. They're very common in marijuana growing, and there's legal and illegal. And very often the products remain on the cannabis flowers and then consumed by the users, posing a number of dangers. So, as again, the studies are showing 84% of legal products contain pesticides. And pesticides are – all pesticides are carcinogenic. I don't think there's any pesticide that I can think of that's not carcinogenic.
Right.
And they also have endocrine disruptors, and they're also they're neurologic toxins. So when we come back, I'm going to describe some of those chemicals to you. Okay, Aaron?
Yes, and I just took that article, pumped it in as a PDF so that the LA Times article, you can read the whole thing. It's very long. It's very detailed. It has a ton of links in it. So you can go do your own research. You don't have to believe us. But if you have people in your world, friends, family, whomever, or you, and you're thinking, well, you know, marijuana is a safe legal alternative to pharmaceuticals, you know, might wanna think that through.
And we haven't even talked about the effect on the unborn babies when the mother smokes it one time.
One time.
Oh, one time.
Maternal fetal blood. Direct to the brain.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Bad brain stuff.
So we have some more bad news coming up in a minute. But
More
bad news. We do, however, have a never-ending source of musical fun for you to take the edge off. So you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Oh, nice job.
Sorry.
Besides our PCP the year before I left for college. Everything looked like a deep-fried meme. I think somebody laced my weed. I didn't do it to myself, I promise. My mama warned me about little pills and older men's strawberry fields that never end. She did her time. Somehow escaped that clawing hand of strength. I'll never understand. That iron grip can get so tight.
Yeah, we should change that. My creation. Is it organic? No. No, it's not. It's chemical.
Again, this farm-to-table stuff they're putting out. Have you ever seen an ad? Now, you see that all the time for, like, the brewery companies. They want to do public tours. Come see how our process works. Come see our sanitation methods. Have you ever heard any cannabis company said, come in and see how our cannabis is grown and watch the real-time testing?
Yeah, zero times.
Never going to happen.
Zero times. That's happened.
Never going to happen.
Yeah, let's take everybody out and so we can show them the
field to table.
The slavery, the dogs we've been eating. You know, now this thing with Ohio, they're kind of jumping in on our jam there, because we were talking about the cartel growers cooking and eating dogs. Now they got the cats going on in Ohio, so we got a little competition going on.
I've been seeing videotape that's,
and it's brutal.
It's brutal.
I mean, it really is. I don't mind admitting, every time I do a presentation on that, that's the first thing I show them. I show them the dead animals, because I don't have pictures of the human trafficking. I don't have pictures of the murders, but that's all part. People who would do that, We all know that, right? Every psychotic serial killer biography you've ever watched or read started with animals. You know, that's the type of people that are doing this, and they don't care if they give you chemicals
and
in your end product.
And they were using marijuana.
And that too.
High potency marijuana. So many of them. So we just did an operation last week.
It's like a haters bazaar today. I really like it.
But by the way, I want to do a shout out to all of our friends in Australia that are writing to us about cannabis going on in Australia, wanting to get all the information they can from California so that what happens has happened here doesn't happen there to the extent, because they have a rainforest. So marijuana grows very well in their rainforest down there.
Oh, yikes.
And they're very worried about their ecosystem. And we're going to, for your listeners, just so you know, we're going to go down under, put some shrimp on the Barbie, or for you vegans like me, tofu on the Barbie. And we're going to talk to our friends in Australia in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully I'll get one of them on here and we can talk, because it's super interesting on what's going on around the world, because California, as California goes, the rest of the country goes, and they're already seeing California weed going on in Australia.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, see, it's like the clip we played from, what is it, Elvis of the Rings or whatever his name was. The thing with that is that he explains in his little podcast there, actually very accurately, that in order to make money, a lot of these things, a lot of these corners are cut. And he goes into detail about how that works. He knows the industry.
It's collapsed.
It's not a secret. They can't make money legally.
No, the legal industry has collapsed. It is illegal.
Regulation is hard. I mean, it's, you know, when you have to meet regulatory burdens, it's difficult. And we've seen too, none of this stuff will pass muster. You can't make this not a Schedule I drug. The fact that we're calling this legal and quote safe because it comes from a store, it's just obviously it's a lie. And now they've been exposed, finally.
So if people look at this document, this memorandum that came from, Jennifer Tierlich, she's a PhD for the Department of Pesticide Regulation, and they look at the acute symptomology and worker safety associated with pesticides detected at illegal cannabis operations. They will see a list of 60-odd chemicals in there that are organophosphates, and all have acute toxicity. And these are what are being found in our grows. There's organochlorines. There's carbamates, there's pyrethroids, there's organosulfur compounds. I mean, it's starting to get into pretty heavy science.
And these are all used to increase the production.
Yes, yield.
And the yield.
That's true. We should point that out. That's the whole point.
That's why they do it. They don't care about the end effect. They just want more yield.
A normal marijuana plant, if it's grown organically, like the guys used to do in Humboldt, you might get a pound off the plant. Today, you're looking at growers that are getting 5 to 10 times that. And,
wow,
and the plants are the size of large Christmas trees. And so when we eradicate grows, we go in there with a skid steer. You can't even do it by hand anymore. You can't even cut them down because they're so big. You have to have heavy equipment to do it. And in a operation that we just did on Backbone Ridge here in Shasta County, it's a historic operation. It's been there for 12 years. The sheriff goes back every single season and cuts it down again, and they come back right away. They were back up and operating within 72 hours. So that is a problem for all across the world. There's so much money in this, and that they can get, they're not being effectively policed across the United States, and that's because of, in the state of California, it's because of been because of Governor Newsom, but it's because of the very effective marketing by cannabis corporations and them spreading a lot of money around politically in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. I mean, you even have speakers of the House who got involved in the cannabis industry here in the United States.
Yeah, Idiot Boehner.
Yeah, that's. And so it's very hard for people like us on the education and enforcement side to try to tell the public, hey, what you're doing to yourself is harming yourself at the at your DNA, it's changing your DNA, and we know that from speaking to Stuart Rice, Reese out of Australia,
is yep.
His work. What's coming down the road? I don't know. I mean, this article from Page really blew the lid off the industry, and there's a lot of people, including people in the legal industry, who are upset because they can't make a dollar, they can't compete against this, and they're going to fold. And a lot of big California cannabis companies have folded. What does this mean for the rest of the United States? Well, we know that Oklahoma's the new California. All the Chinese migrant labor that's coming across the border, it's streaming into Oklahoma to be involved in basically human trafficked labor. Do you think, and all the chemicals, we saw a tractor trailer load, a flatbed tractor trailer, full size, loaded with pallets of white bags of some kind of crystalline fertilizer with only Chinese markings on it that went into the grows on A12. Now, how did that even get into California?
Up in Siskiyou County by Montague.
Up by Montague, right. How did that even get into California?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they pick these rural counties like Australia, huge amounts of rural space in Australia. How are they going to regulate it? They're not ready for what's coming.
How do they get that past customs and all of that? How's that happening?
I would think they're sneaking it across the border, the porous border, and even, they could. I don't know. It's an interesting question. How are they getting these massive amount of chemicals in?
Well, and
are they rebagging them? Are they putting them are they calling them, nitrates, and they put an M-chem number on them, and Border Patrol looks at them and passes them through? Maybe. Are they bringing them in bulk and calling them something else? Maybe. The U.S. Border Patrol, not every single officer has an MX-908 device, a portable gas spectrometer to check what's coming through the border.
Another thing that kind of blows my mind is, name me one other product that's legal to sell that can contain these levels of pesticide, any level of pesticide.
Yeah.
And it's legal, and you can sell it over the counter. Yeah. I don't know of
any. Zero. Yeah. Zero products.
But this industry,
well, if you think about it, it kind of makes sense, because they build this as it's medical, although there's no medical, actual real medical proof that it has medical benefit. So they pitched it as that. We were just mean to cancer patients, and most of us didn't smoke pot, so people didn't know how to fight back. They didn't know how to fight back. They were kind of guilted into it. They voted for it. Then suddenly it became recreational. Gee whiz, who could have seen that coming? Got kind of guilted into that. And all the people that aren't part of this industry in any way, shape, or form, like all those are the people who listened to the quote at the beginning and went, what's a cart, right? We don't have a clue. We're not pushing back on this. We don't know how.
Some of these chemicals, pesticides that are being used, they are instantly fatal. If you inhaled that chemical in the grow, instantly fatal. They're using a sarin type gas now in the grow houses. They mix two chemicals together and they burn them. Creates a sarin type gas. It kills everything. There is in those grows in Siskiyou County. There is nothing walking. There is nothing flying.
Yeah.
There is nothing crawling. There is nothing
like
at all. It's the moon.
Yeah.
And I want everybody to know, especially our friends in Australia, this is what portends cannabis for you in your country.
And if you haven't been kind of following our long series on marijuana over time, let's see, first interviews were in 2017. So we've been at this for a while. And we've had, this is not opinion. This is, for me, I'm no chemical expert. I'm not a pot smoker. I don't know anything about that stuff. But I have been in the cartel grows multiple times. So all the people that have talked about this have been there, have seen it, are part of it. They work in the industry. Philip Drum, he's a pharmacist, really good at that. We've had John Norris, who worked with Fish and Game, doing massive eradications throughout California and other places too. He's a big strike force guy.
And testified in front of Congress several times.
That too, forgot about that. So there, none of these interviews back from 2017 are just people's opinion. And I've got a bunch of stuff listed on here for you. You can see the pictures of the places we're talking about. The Moonscape, that's all on there. The photos are on there. Articles, interviews. I posted the LA Times thing on there. And if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, click on the pot tab, it is all, you know, pulled together for you right there so you can see all of that at one time and share it with people. Because that's the only thing that's going to save us is if people reach out to the people that they know and wake them up.
And us. Educate before you recreate. That's the bottom line.
Oh, there you go.
You know, yep. I am for sober living personally, but I don't tell what somebody should do inside. You cannot legislate morality, and the use of marijuana is a moral decision. But as soon as your freedom gets into my freedom, that's where it stops. Because we can't accept people who are high at work, controlling machinery, getting in cars, doing surgical operations, teaching our children.
Driving on the roads. But then let's think about it even further.
Contaminating all the water, you know, and then there's no wildlife up there. There's no deer. There's nothing.
But you think about all the people who will fry their brain by doing this. When you look at the results of all those chemicals, and they listed in the article what happens when you ingest these things, when you smoke them and whatnot. These people will all wind up living the rest of their lives on SSDI supported by the rest of us because they will not be able to work and take care of themselves.
They'll have tremors. They'll be
the Parkinson's, early onset Parkinson's. Why would somebody do that to themselves? I mean, honestly, that makes no sense.
It's a good high.
If the public saw the grow from last week that was eradicated on Backbone Ridge, they saw the hole dug in the ground where they were pooping in the ground, and that was running directly into our water supply, Lake Shasta, they would be outraged. But that's just an example. One little example happens all the time.
And yet all across the country, they're thinking, hey, this is a great idea.
Yeah, let's legalize it for our state.
Yeah, let's do this some more because it brings in lots of revenue. I'm sorry, the outflow is going to far outpace that. So I did find a nice capstone song on the whole thing, Zero, because that's who we're going to have. We're going to have a bunch of zeros walking around. It's going to be bad. So anyway, sorry about all the bad news today. Trying to make it a little bit fun.
Thanks, Officer Joe, for coming
in. Officer Joe, you've been listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Say the truth, we'll say you free.